Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in. Today's show is a radio documentary about Aboriginal students and their teachers. I am your host, Craig Mack. Since the 1972 Indian Control of Indian Education policy paper, a profound change in the thinking of Aboriginal education took place. No longer would assimilation be the standard of education for Aboriginals. No, now the culture of the Aboriginals must impact the education. How has Aboriginal culture been accommodated in the past years? How can teachers accommodate these Aboriginal students now? What does authentic Aboriginal education look like? Well, this is what we will be discussing in this radio program.
The next thing that I want to talk to you guys about is the treaty promise around education. So we know that, you know, there is this treaty right to education. You know, and we probably also know that the Supreme Court of Canada has ruled that treaties need to be liberally construed, meaning that our treaty rights are not frozen in time, and they must be interpreted in a way that allows them to evolve and keep pace with the developments of society. We know all that. We also know that our oral tradition is important and that it must be taken into account when us or our treaty partners are trying to interpret what these treaty rights mean.
More than 40% of the Aboriginal population is between the ages of 25 and 44 years old. Less than 6% have a university degree. Less than 3% of Canadian educators identify themselves as Aboriginal. These things cause broken homes and poverty in the lives of Aboriginal students. If they don't have a university degree, it is more difficult for them to get a well-paying job that they can thrive with. As a result, stress is brought into their lives. Wahb Kanu is a Canadian musician, broadcaster, and educator, best known as the host of programming on CBC Radio and the CBC television program, Eighth Fire. He is currently the Director of Indigenous Inclusion at the University of Winnipeg. How does Wahb believe Aboriginal students' needs ought to be met? Well, Wahb points out that teachers have to help students overcome social struggles. This begins by addressing their habits, including stress. This is the foundation for the success for any Aboriginal student.
Essentially what happens to kids who grow up with stressful childhoods is that their bodies are constantly being thrown into this fight or flight reaction. You know, like if you are about to get up in front of a crowd of people and talk, your skin kind of stands on edge and the hairs on your neck stand up. Your heart starts to beat faster. Well, that's a physiological reaction which happens when you feel threatened, when you feel stressed. And what's happening is that your body is releasing a bunch of stress hormones, right? And it's good in the short term if you're in a survival situation because it makes your reflexes quicker, it makes you more able to respond to the immediate concerns in your environment. But if this happens to you day after day, week after week, year after year as a child, it can be very damaging. I'll give you one example. For instance, when these stress hormones kick in, they cause more blood to rush through your arteries in your body. And that's good if you do that once and you need to run away from a scrap. Right? But if you do that every day for years, it ends up building up plaque in your arteries, and it can lead to problems with hypertension and heart disease later on in life. So essentially in this book, they're pointing out how early childhood stresses can lead to all sorts of problems later on in life, from physiological problems to psychological ones. The interesting thing is, they found that the way to counteract those things is simple. It's to provide these kids with TLC.
Waugh points out that stress will cause not only health problems, but cause students to suffer in their academic life. Teachers need to accommodate students who deal with stress in their personal lives due to social struggles at home. Waugh says that this is done through caring for the students they interact with on a regular basis. This makes sense because we can't teach students as if they are all the same. Each has their own needs and problems that make them unique. If teachers care for their students, as Waugh says, their basic needs that they are lacking at home will at least be met at the school. Then their stress level will be lessened, and as a result, they won't struggle as much socially.
Beyond that, when we think about the amount of kids in child and family services or children's aid across the country, the amount of our young people who are growing up in poverty, the amount of our young people who are growing up in broken homes or facing numerous other social challenges, well, this is not an issue of the long ago past. This is an issue which many of our students and many of our young people continue to face today. And that has big impacts. People have learned behaviors which are not always healthy. And because they've repeated them day after day, week after week, they've created habits. Habits which are often self-destructive. Habits which are often self-defeating, right? And it's very, very difficult to break a habit once it's been created. And so, you know, it would be awesome if we could say that, you know, the solution for First Nations kids, we'll just send Waugh Canoe out to every reserve to give a one-hour talk, and that'll be it. That would be awesome. I would love that. Straight from my bank account. But what this implies is that that short-run, high-impact solution is not the way to go. But rather, the real change that needs to take place is a slow, day-in to day-out, daily grind sort of change. To be there and to support people on a day-to-day level and to help them make the healthy choices each and every day. Right? It's a far less sexy solution, but in the long run, it'll be the far more effective one.
According to an article done by Yata Kanu from the University of Manitoba, there are four things that teachers do to incorporate Aboriginal culture into their classrooms. A. Teachers focus on teaching students about the contributions made by each cultural group. B. Teachers occasionally add content, concepts, and perspectives from other cultures into the curriculum that is largely Eurocentric. C. They teach curriculum topics from multiple perspectives. And D. Students are encouraged to take action for social change. Some of these inclusion techniques are used more than others. However, they all do the same thing. Chris Garner is an educator from Australia working for Indigenous Education. He's created profound relationships with Aboriginal families. He proposes a unique solution to help students succeed in the classroom. Chris is one such person who advocates for integrating Aboriginal culture into teaching, which follows Yata Kanu's second point of adding content, concepts, and perspectives from other cultures into the curriculum.
Globally, we would agree that in Western education, there's a formula for success. We could say that when we help students understand their potential, And when we encourage their efforts, then we see success. Potential times effort brings success. But as we consider the Indigenous worldview, so different to ours, and their learning styles, I see something missing. I would say potential times effort, and when it's relevant to their context, that's when we see success.
As can be seen from what Chris Garner just said, incorporating culture is important for success of the students. Wob agrees with what Garner mentioned.
There's another study last year at Arizona State University of urban Native youth in Phoenix that found that those young people who are active in culture and who knew their language were less likely to be involved with drugs and alcohol. Similar study came out of Saskatchewan just 2 weeks ago, essentially found the same thing, but not strictly among youth, but amongst all Indigenous people, with those involved with culture and language less likely to be involved with substance use. So there's this growing body of research which suggests what any grandma or grandpa would have already told them. Culture and language matter. So what I mean to say by education is a new buffalo, but the Sundance is still the Sundance, is this. Yes, there is a new path towards economic prosperity which involves a Western education. Yes. But there is still tremendous wisdom, strength, and beauty within our traditional cultures and languages. Here's the thing. If you see who the successful Indigenous people are today, they are the ones who have both. They, on the one hand, have some combination of Western education, skills, and experience, but they also have a tie to either community or to culture. I believe our cultures are valuable intrinsically. They're valuable in and of themselves. But we're also starting to get evidence that they are instrumentally valuable, meaning that they have a value because they lead to other effects positively in the lives of people in our communities.
In addition to Wob and Chris, Emily Ferries believes that incorporating culture into the school is important for multiple reasons. Emily Ferries is a Native Studies professor at Laurentian University. She has a special interest in First Nations education.
The true history of Aboriginal people be taught in school so that people can understand why we're in the situation that we're in today. Because there are a lot of stereotypes out there and there's still a lot of racism. Our children have to go through the same thing, and I know that it really affects their self-esteem, it affects their self-worth, and we spend a lot of time teaching our children as to how to cope with it and how to deal with it. We need to teach them on that they should be proud of their people. And if the school does that, I think there'll be more awareness of who we really are as First Nations people.
Emily Ferries has got a good point. There is so much racism out there, and we should encourage students in our classroom to embrace their heritage. We're going to take a quick commercial break now. Stay tuned. After the break, we will be hearing from Deborah Lemkel.
Hey, I'm not a savage, nor am I uncivilized. I'm not a drunk, nor am I dirty. I have to live on a reserve or a teepee or an igloo. I'm not homeless, I'm not on welfare or EI. Everyone is not my cousin. I'm not related to Geronimo, Crazy Horse, Blue Real. My last name does not have the word child, thunder, crazy, or crow in it. I have a chief, not a prime minister. I believe in Aboriginal self-government, not assimilation. I have moccasins because my grandmother made them, not because some company found a new line of fashion. I smoke tobacco for ceremony, not because my friends do. I hunt, trap, and fish to feed my family, not for a big trophy wall in my basement. I don't survive on pemmican, and there are less than 1,000 wild buffalo left. I'm not a chug, a redskin, a half-orc, or an apple. It's pronounced Indian, not Injun. But don't you dare call me Indian. And it's Sigison Darcy, and I am Aboriginal.
And we're back. That was an inspiring commercial created by a young Aboriginal student as part of a research project. Okay, now we will be hearing from Deborah Lemkel. Deborah Lemkel is an American Indian specialist at Elk River Area Schools in Minneapolis, Minnesota. She coordinates and teaches American Indian history, culture, traditions, and languages of Ojibwe, Dakota, and Cherokee.
Incorporate the culture in everything that we do, just to bring back who you are. You know, you have to know who you are before you can go out and do something.
I am pleased to have with me in the studio Melody, who I will be interviewing. This is her first year teaching in the Louis Riel School Division. She has a minor in Native Studies and spent a total of 3 years teaching in a rural school in Manitoba. I'm going to be asking her a few questions about her teaching practice with Aboriginal students. I want to thank you for coming in today to speak with us on this topic. I know your schedule is very busy, especially with report cards coming up, so I really appreciate you being here. Well, let's begin. My first question I have for you is, what percentage of your school consists of Aboriginal students?
I'm not sure. About 50% of the school is English as a second language. That other 50% is made up of Aboriginal students and English-speaking students.
Thank you for that, Melody. The next question I'd like to ask you, if you don't mind, how do you incorporate the Aboriginal culture into your teaching with this multicultural classroom?
I incorporate Aboriginal culture into my teaching this year by my division offers the René Delorme Centre. It is a centre for Aboriginal education, so I'm not sure what grades are all offered to go, but I know 3, 4 to 5, 6, they each get a half day field trip, and it is based on curricular outcomes, and we get to learn, and it's from an Aboriginal viewpoint. So we're going to be learning about mapping of Canada through an Aboriginal perspective. This center will also send me any resources, video resources, book resources that I request that I can incorporate within my classroom. They also sent an Aboriginal author to our school to do a reading of a book that he'd written and a puppet play, and my students really enjoy that. Our school also has incorporated the seven teachings, and this year for the Remembrance Day ceremony, we're going to be incorporating courage. So the students are fully aware of what the seven teachings are and how we use them within the room.
That's great that your school is so willing to incorporate Aboriginal culture. It looks like you put a lot of thought and consideration into your curriculum. Now, Melody, in your opinion, how does their home life affect their time in school?
I believe this is kind of a loaded question, as I see all students, whether they're Aboriginal or not, their home life always affects their school life. If whether or not, regardless of their race or culture, if they're not fed in the morning, if they come from a family where, you know, it's a little disruptive, that affects how they act at school. That affects how they make their friends. And, I also see positive effects. I see students who come from lovely homes who have supportive parents, and I see how beneficial that is as well.
That is a good point about how everyone is affected by their home life. Now that you mention it, people that I know act in different ways because of their home life. For example, I know a child who has a very rough home life, and as a result of it, he struggles academically. This student is not Aboriginal at all, and he is still affected in the same way. Okay, I have one last question for you, Melody. Are there any changes, both positive and negative, that you have seen in the school within the past 4 years?
I've only been employed in my current division since September. What I've seen there is I've had opportunities to visit the René Delorme Center, where they have resources that I can order, that I can bring into my classroom to add a little bit more to any lesson that I wish. They're also willing to come in and help. They also let you go for a field trip. So my classroom, we're going to learn about mapping, and we're going to learn from an Aboriginal perspective, which is lovely. We've also had a chance to have an Aboriginal author come to our school already, and he did a puppet play, and we got some of his books in our classroom. The children loved that. We've also incorporating the seven teachings into our Remembrance Day ceremony. We're going to incorporate courage. The schoolhouse that previously I taught for 3 years outside the city, I didn't really see any integration of Aboriginal perspectives within that division. I do have a minor in Native Studies, so you do what you can. But without the supports from your division, it becomes very difficult. And you try your best, but it's not consistent throughout. Where I'm finding it's more consistent within the classroom, within the school, and it's also visible.
Thank you, Melody, for taking time out of your day to inform us on what is going on in your school. In summary of what we talked about today during this documentary, we started off discussing the treaties of education. Wabkinew said that treaties state that everyone has the right to an education. We are able to change these treaties to suit the common traditions in life, but the general outlines of the treaties need to stay the same. Next, we went on to talk about how there are many Aboriginal students that have to deal with stress in their lives. This is because they may not come from supportive families and most likely do not have a high education. As a result, many of these students and their families live in poverty. This stress is not very healthy for them, especially long term, as it can cause blood pressure to increase and heart disease later on in their life. But although Wab mentions all this devastating information, he says that there is one simple cure for it: to care for the students that we come in contact with every day. Teachers may be the only support that a child has growing up. Wab then mentions that we all create habits that definitely do not help us to manage stress. Now, what did Wab say we can do to fix this? Of course, we need to support people, and not just one time. Wab specifically says that change is a slow process, and we need to be persistent with our support. After Wab gave that insightful information, we then heard from Yata Kanu, who is from here at the University of Manitoba. She gave 4 ways in which teachers incorporate the Aboriginal culture into the classroom. The main 2 that are used today in the classroom include teaching about contributions from different cultural groups and also adding content from other cultures into the curriculum. Chris Garner as well as Wab both talked about how if students have a firm grasp on their culture and heritage, they are more likely to succeed. They will feel like they belong somewhere, and this will enable and empower them to continue to learn. Emily Ferries and Deborah Lemkel also mentioned that culture is a very important part of education. One key point from Emily Ferries that is critical to remember is that racism really affects people's self-esteem. Even though we may not think we are racist, or what we say is racist, other people may not believe the same thing. Many cultural stereotypes that have been passed down can in fact be racist, so we need to take special care in how we talk to others. Lastly, we had a fantastic in-studio interview with Melody. Melody told us all about what her school is doing to incorporate the Aboriginal culture into their classrooms. By providing inclusion and integration and readily accessible resources, teachers have more support in incorporating Aboriginal culture into their lessons. This school has realized what is important, as they want their students to succeed and feel included in the curriculum. Finally, I'd like to thank all the people who contributed to this radio documentary. Without you, it wouldn't have been possible. Special shout out to Arlana, Sherry, and Katie. Last, but certainly not least, I'd like to thank you, the listeners. I hope you feel more informed about the education of Aboriginal students and what you can do to keep their culture alive.